From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. So much to talk about in our world, and we're pleased and honored to welcome in Jennifer Campbell, the director of virtual Camp Pendola. Jennifer, yeah. Good day to you.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Are you virtually there?
I'm virtually here, yes.
My kids use the term virtually almost like it's temporary or something like, well, yeah. I virtually want to go to the store. Like, no, that's not quite what the word means.
No, it's not quite what the word means.
Like, I'm not sure.
Yeah. I mean, that is definitely one way that we could use it right now. But, no. We did a virtual camp. So we had two really good weeks of virtual camp. But we were really there, just not, you know, in person.
Talk about how the thought process that went into we can't have camp, and yet we're seeing across the country people who had camps, some of them just day camps, some of them even, you know, week long overnight full bore camps, and unfortunately a lot of transmission of the virus.
Right. And so I was just actually reading a news report that was saying, I think that the American Camping Association said that 82% of summer, like sleepaway summer camps, did not happen this year.
Mm-hmm.
They closed entirely. So it was a smaller group that were able to run, and it was state by state. We, in the state of California, we really never were given guidelines for being allowed to run an overnight camp.
Right.
And even the day camp guidelines didn't come out until, I don't know, second, third week of June. And so, and that was just too late to try to make that decision and revamp what we were doing. So we made, the decision was made in May.
Mm-hmm.
That knowing the way that this virus is going and there's so many just unknowns, and there's still so many unknowns with it.
Sure.
That we couldn't picture a way that we can make it safe for campers and for staff to be in person. And so, in any mode of in-person, whether that be a day camp or, you know, trying to think outside the box of all kinds of different ways. And so we just decided that this was going to be going virtual and doing this, doing programming over Zoom was the best way that we could try to give some kind of a camp experience to kids, knowing it's not the same as being up at camp, but that it's something where they're still able to, you know, see counselors and see their friends and form some kind of a community. And that was really the goal. I mean, it was an uphill battle to, you know, convince people that that's what we should be doing and that it'll work. And, you know, it was a small number who signed up this year for this, and that's, you know, to be expected to a certain extent. But the kids that came, it's really positive feedback. We've done a camper survey already, and it's been really great feedback of the reasons that we wanted to do it were the reasons and the positive things that they got out of it. So.
And nobody got sunburned.
And nobody got sunburned.
Or mosquito bites.
No camp freckles. Nobody needed, like, you know, a gallon of calamine lotion.
Nobody had to jump in that cold pool.
Well, I mean, not that cold pool, but we did try to do a polar bear challenge. And if you go to our social media, you'll see some of the kids were able to do it. And one of our counselors, Ms. Catella, she did it both weeks. But we called it our polar bear challenge, and we, you know, kind of, you know, dump a bucket of cold water on you. The old ice bucket challenge,
yeah.
But, you know, not exactly the same. There's a really funny video that was posted from two of our campers. And I feel like the their mom and dad had way more fun with it than maybe they did. but it's the dad is recording and mom is enjoying dumping the cold water on the kids a little bit. And the kids are, you know, screaming with, like, delight, but it's just really funny.
I remember the old ice. I think that was for ALS, if I'm not mistaken.
It was.
And we had a very prominent, well-known person in our town who had ALS and was kind of spreading the word, and everybody did it and posted it on Facebook or wherever, you know.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun. I finally got mine, and the anticipation is worse than the actual ice water.
For sure. The anticipation is harder. That's what we even find at the camp with the pond. Like, once that first kid goes in and then everyone knows for sure it's really cool, like, there's a mental game in there. But once that, you know, that anticipation, you know, kids that really want to do it, they'll get a little scared that it's going to be too cold. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting that you called it off if you were or transitioned in May, because in May things were starting to get better, and the thinking was summer's going to come and the heat and everything. Most of the scientists were saying it'll go away in the summer, but it might come roaring back in the fall. And indeed, you guys were ahead of the curve by saying we're not even going to mess with summer. And look, summer got very, very much worse. So, especially in California. So we're very fortunate.
Yeah, and I don't even know that it was nobody, like, in May, nobody knew what was going to happen. I think people were hopeful that possibly the weather, you know, the warmer weather would cause it to go away or to lessen or, you know, whatever. I was watching those daily briefings. I was, you know, trying to track what's happening, and there was just too many unknowns.
Yeah. Yep. Prudence, caution. That's the word of the day. And that's what you guys have always done at Camp Pendola, just the way you run the camp when it's in person.
Yeah, no, we have to. I mean, we have I do an activity with my staff where, you know, ask them to pull out their most valuable thing they have on them. And then I hold it in my hand and take each one of it and keep it in my hand as a reminder that, like, these parents are entrusting the most valuable thing they have in their life to us.
Yep.
And so we have to operate in a way that shows that we're honoring that and understanding that we have someone's child in our care for the week. And so we have to operate with that in mind. And so this to us is just, you know, the safest way to do that. And, you know, the important part was that the kids really had fun, and it's hard to do that on Zoom and in a virtual setting, and but they did, and they were able to find community and, you know, see their friends that they haven't really been able to, like, interact with in person. And so that's, you know, they were able to interact on Zoom and hang out, and, you know, they were listening, you know, they're in their Zoom sessions doing arts and crafts, and they're listening to music and talking about what's going on in their lives with each other, and able to do that in a way that, you know, where they would at camp, but we weren't able to do it that way. So it was still fun, and it was a great experience.
That's you know, the other thing is nobody got homesick.
Nobody got homesick. Yep. I loved that part.
How often does that happen?
I mean, it's not a huge number of kids. It's, you know, everyone gets homesick a little bit. Like, we all, even the staff, you know, we miss home every once in a while. But it's very manageable, and it's, you know, the kids that get really homesick, you know, we're usually able to talk to them, and by day two, they're good. You know, it's just that first night sometimes, or, you know, that first hour of, like, oh, mom and dad really did leave? Okay. You know? and it's really, for me, it's just reminding the camper that, like, yes, they did leave you here because they know that you are strong and can do this, and they'll be back to pick you up at the end of the week.
Yeah.
So, you know, like it's really focusing on that. Like, they believe in you so much that they trust that you can do this. So we're gonna make it. Let's figure out a way to do that.
So, and, so this was going to be the 60th anniversary. Well, it still was the 60th anniversary of Camp Pendola. It was just a little bit different Camp Pendola.
Exactly.
So what did you learn from the experience? Is it doable? You know, if for some reason, some year in the future you have to do it again, what would you do differently? Or would you say, no, it's not really doable, or yes, it is, but we would need to do X, Y, and Z?
I do think it's doable if we need to do it in the future again. I think there's activities that we tried that we maybe wouldn't do again. They're just a little bit challenging to explain over Zoom. I might send more just extra activities for campers to do with mom and dad, you know, not just the instruction time. But I honestly think we really thought out what we were doing. The one thing we're not expecting for campers to repeat like they did, just because we don't, like at a regular camp, we don't generally have kids that come for more than a week. And so a lot of our activities, because we want everyone to learn lanyards, everyone to learn certain activities, they did repeat between the 2 weeks. I maybe would change that a little bit, but it's hard because, you know, everyone wants to do friendship bracelets and things like that. So, but I would definitely, it's definitely something we could do again if we needed to. You know, it's not the optimal way to operate, but it works. We found that it works.
Wow. So, looking ahead, obviously, you're a long ways from next summer, but I know how these things go. You don't just show up on the 1st of June and say, okay, let's open camp. You got a lot of planning you have to do. Or go back to when you first started, directing Camp Pendola. Do you make changes every year?
We make little tweaks here and there every year, but we don't make massive changes. That's just not a good way to do it. And so, you know, we'll make some tweaks every year, but nothing that's drastic. We've got to start planning for next summer. There are, you know, we've got to kind of look at health and safety a little bit differently than we have in the past. With some of the protocols we'll have to do for check-in and screening. For sure, that's going to still be something we have to do, and some of our kind of cleaning procedures with extra cleaning procedures we'll have to, you know, put in place, and an extra hand washing station, things like that. That we, you know, we didn't necessarily, like, there's plenty of places for kids to wash their hands in the bathrooms and all that, but just adding some extra places so that meal times don't, you know, take an hour of just washing hands before they get in to get their food.
So is there an overall group that, the Camp Association of America or something that put out guidelines this summer?
So the American Camping Association, in conjunction with the CDC, worked on some guidelines. They came out, in the middle of June, I think, is when they finally did come out with some guidelines and some ideas. But everything has to kind of, it's going to be county specific.
Yeah, it is very much county specific in California.
And there's statewide guidelines, and then there's county guidelines. And so it's taking in all of those different pieces and figuring out, you know, what's going to be the best practice where we are. So there's just lots of that kind of moving pieces for that kind of information. And to be perfectly honest, they didn't, aside from a day camp guideline, they release nothing for overnight camp from the state of California. Mm-hmm. So it's trying to figure out, like, this is from something from the day camp, what can we use, even pulling the schools things that they've created for public schools and private schools, that those guidelines as well would be helpful.
Yeah, and it's an odd mix because we've got 58 counties in California, and they've all got a county health director. A couple of them probably combine them, some of the smaller counties. But they each have to, which I think is right, respond to the needs in their own. Like MoDoc County, for instance, for months had no cases at all, and finally had a couple of cases. But one size doesn't fit all, so it makes sense. And yet, with Camp Pendola, you're drawing kids from, even though you're in, Yuba County?
Yeah, we're in
Yuba County. So you could say, well, Yuba County has these rules, but you're drawing people from a number of counties.
Exactly. And so that's where it becomes tricky and figuring out, how we run it. Will masks still be a requirement and a social norm for next summer? Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't predict that right now. Will there be a vaccine? I don't know. All of these unknowns we have to, play out and figure out how to make it work the best while keeping the heart of camp the same and really keeping that the fun that we are able to enjoy and the spirit of community that's formed there, trying to keep all of those moving pieces, in the puzzle together. So maybe it means, reshaping the puzzle a little bit, but
next summer you're going to have a protocol for those monster hornets or something.
Oh, gosh.
It'll be something different.
I can't even. Oh, that's frightening. That is scarier to me than almost anything. Murder hornets? No, thanks.
Hornets are, with all due respect to Sacramento State, hornets are nasty.
Yes, they're the worst.
Oh, man.
That's the worst.
And unlike the honeybee, which dies after stinging you, the hornets can just keep stinging you.
Yeah, no kidding. No, it's not good. They're not good at all. I don't like it.
So we'll
make it work next year. We'll see where we are and moving forward. I don't know what next summer holds at this point, but I'm looking forward to summer 2021 and trying to, figure out how we get the best camp experience for campers next year, knowing that we did virtual camp this year. And the hope and prayer is that next year we will be able to be in person again.
So you must have had some disappointed counselors and cooks and maintenance people and everybody that really... I know you had at Camp Pendola up in the hills just great esprit de corps among your staff.
Yeah. We did have some disappointed staff. I mean, I was able to hire 7 really phenomenal leaders who we've had this for all of them. It was their third or fourth summer. And so to be it for virtual camp. And so, and they were just so excited that they had some kind of camp experience. Like, they were so sad that we weren't going to have camp. We had started the hiring process when this all got canceled. And, we had some great people who were going to be new counselors. And so that was a bummer. Like, that was probably the hardest. That was probably one of the bigger bummers of the summer is that these people didn't get to experience the Camp Pendola family and really get to live up in the Pines together, living in that community that they swarm throughout a summer. So, but we did have 7 that were able to work together during the week and see each other on Zoom and all that kind of fun stuff.
So next summer is just up in the air at this point, but I'm sure you're in the planning stages already.
Yeah.
So will next year be 60 or 61?
It'll be 61.
Can't roll back the clock.
No, can't roll back the clock. No, well, first of all, I do not want to relive 2020. No. But no, we can't roll back the clock. You know, this was what God put in front of us for this year, and this is how He wanted us to spend the 60th anniversary. You know, shake it up a little bit, I guess. There's something I keep every time I kind of think about the things we didn't get this year or that we didn't get to do. We did a retreat during Easter season, our Oasis retreat, and one of our speakers was David Bisogno. And he said this line, and it was so perfect. And he said, "God stopped the world to spend time with you."
Oh, wow.
And every time I think, like, oh, this just stinks, or, like, this is just, I can't believe this, or, like, you know, just all of those things that run through our head of, like, the frustration.
Yep.
I just come back to that line and think, okay, this is the plan I've got. Okay, let's keep it moving. Like,
you know, I mean, we had a high school senior in our household this spring, and, you know, missed prom, missed graduation, yeah, other than the virtual graduation, missed, you know, she was on the track team and it just got rug pulled out, you know, and all those things. And
right.
you look at the whole world and you look at people in the ICUs and you look at all that has happened to people and you're going, you didn't have it so bad, you know, but, and the more you look, you realized everybody was impacted in some special way. Something was taken away, something they couldn't do, some vacation they had planned, some they were going to go off to college, some maybe they're going to start a new job. You know, everybody's life is important to them, you know,
right.
and everybody was impacted. And I think you said it perfectly, you know, this is what God put in front of us. This is the Lord, the day the Lord has made. Let's rejoice and be glad in it, you know, and sometimes that's hard. But when you get up in the morning and you go, is this still going on? You know, it's like you say, OK, God's in charge. God knows what's going on. And this is what He's put in front of us. So we can, you know, close our door and close our eyes and say, I'm not going to participate. Or we can figure out how we can help people, how we can continue to be Christians and Catholics in this world and continue to do everything the Lord has asked of us.
Yes, exactly. I mean,
but we still want it to go away.
Well, of course.
At least that's the goal. Jennifer, switching hats.
Yes.
You're switching hat. I'm not, but you are.
Yeah.
Talk us about this great workshop coming up.
So we have been... we started with Lent doing a weekly retreat series, and then we moved into Easter and we called it Oasis. And then during Ordinary Times, we changed it to it's every other week on Thursday nights at 9 o'clock, and it's a young adult retreat, basically.
Jennifer, are you with us? I think we may have... We may have lost Jennifer. We'll get her back here in a second. Another problem with the virtual everything. We're not allowed to have guests in our studio anymore, at least for the time being. And we miss that very much, but we soldier on with phone interviews, which are fine, but occasionally people fall. It's interesting, you see even on national television, you know, everybody's, you know, appearing on camera from their home, and sometimes the transmission is not up to the standards that you'd normally see on network television, and yet here we are. I think we have Jennifer back now. Jennifer, are you there?
Hello, this is Mark Ross from the Diocese of Sacramento Black Catholic Ministry. This is the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you for all you have done and continue to do here in the Diocese of Sacramento with our Black Catholic Ministry. Jennifer Campbell is with us.
Hi.
Jennifer, you were telling us about this workshop.
Yes. So it's called Extraordinary Times. It's a series retreat that we are doing through Ordinary Time and every other week. And we are working in collaboration with the Diocese of Orange to get our speakers.
Mm-hmm.
And basically every week or every other week, we start at 9 o'clock and we stream them to Facebook Live. And it's a speaker who comes and does shares a reflection on the upcoming gospel reading. And then that person, whoever it is that week, and I have a little discussion on what they shared in their reflection. And then we open it up to questions for anyone who is watching it with us. And this week, we are really excited. This Thursday night, we have Catherine Anguillo from, she actually works at the McGrath Institute at Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a speaker, national speaker, and she was the Youth Young Adult Ministry Director for the Archdiocese of Atlanta previously to moving to Notre Dame. So she'll be there to share her reflection on the readings, bring in a young saint, as well as answer questions about anything. I mean, we've gotten questions, you name it. People have asked us the questions online during these retreats. It's been a great experience so far.
Wonderful. And are we still offering the parent support workshop as well?
Yes, we are. We are still offering parent support workshops. Those are monthly. Our next one is going to be on August 17th, which is a Monday night.
Mm-hmm.
And our speaker, her name is Andrea, and she is going to be speaking on introducing theology of the body to your teens and young adults and having that discussion of what that beautiful theology is that we got from John Paul II. Saint John Paul II.
Right.
And so that's going to be our next one, which is on the 17th of August. And that is on YouTube, which is the YouTube channel for the Diocese. And those are end at 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock. And it's Andrea is the youth minister at St. Mary Parish.
Yes, St. Mary of Vacaville.
Right. And so, yeah. Between St. Mary and St. Joseph, you got to specify in this diocese.
Yeah. And St. Patrick.
And St. Patrick, yes. Indeed.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And they can contact you if they, do they need to sign up ahead of time?
They don't need to sign up ahead of time. They can contact me if they have questions or want more information. They can also go to the SCD the diocesan website, scd.org, and if you type in Extraordinary Time or after the org, /extraordinary times or /parent support, you'll get to the website that has all the information and the links to join the different workshops and retreats that we're doing.
Very good. Very good. Well, Jennifer, always a pleasure to talk with you. And thanks for, I know a lot of kids are very thankful that you guys didn't just throw your hands up in the air and say, nope, that's it. No camp.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
Great.
And thanks for all you do here in the diocese.
Thank you, Bob.
That's Jennifer Campbell, the director, among many, many hats she wears here, director of Camp Pendola at this summer at the Davis Newman Center at UC Davis. They've adapted the weekly programming to be a fusion of in-person and virtual activities. On Mondays, they host game nights via Zoom, 7 p.m. They play online games such as Scriblio, Kahoot, and Jackbox on Wednesday evenings. They have social distance picnics at the local Davis Farmers Market, a very famous farmers market. They have over 40 student volunteers who are also working on preparing the upcoming year that will be full of opportunities for new and returning students for UC Davis. Weekly masses, retreats, fellowships, Newman Nights, solidarity and justice work, and much more are on the horizon. For more information, contact Vince Nims, that's NIMS, at V NIMS, VNIMS at scd.org. And UC Davis, like so many of the other schools, universities, Sacramento State, Chico State, both have wonderful Newman centers as well. They're all trying to figure out is it going to be virtual? Is it going to be in person? Is it going to be a hybrid? How are they going to handle it? And everybody's so sort of, everything's tentative of this stuff and subject to change sometimes overnight. So, know that the Newman Centers are going to have ongoing programs at all three Newman Centers in the Diocese of Sacramento, no matter whether it's virtual or in person or some combination of the two. Well, we're pleased to be joined by John Watkins, the Director of Catholic Charities and Social Concerns. John, good morning.
Bob, good to talk with you. How are you doing?
Doing very well. We're here in our isolation. I feel like I'm on those old game shows where they put you in an isolation booth and played the dramatic music as they gave you 60 seconds to come up with the right answer.
Oh, my gosh. You're making me nervous, Bob. What's the question?
I don't know. When will
Should
the pandemic...
Can I reach out to a friend for help?
Yes.
I think I need to reach out to a friend for help on this one.
You've got a minute and a half to call a friend and come up with the correct answer.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, man.
Fair.
Yeah. So much happening. Catholic Charities, I was reading a story the other day about all the relief that Catholic Charities throughout the country has provided during the pandemic, and the trying to put a dollar figure on it, which is almost impossible because you're dealing with a lot of volunteer labor and stuff, and generally labor can cost you money. And it's an astronomical figure, and the number of different things around the country that Catholic Charities was involved in is astronomical too. And you think
it's nearly about $500 million across the country just in the last 3 months.
That's the figure I saw. Yeah,
lockdown. That's right. Yeah, I mean, that's what we are always ready for, is to respond to the needs of the community. And obviously, in our diocese, we've given out probably nearly $20 million worth of goods and services. In our case, most of those are related to the goods. Most of those are related now because we have such large food programs. And so we've been really, that's a major part of the need. It's just been food access. We've really gone from 150,000 meals a month to probably close now to about 330,000 meals per month.
Wow.
And it's continuing to rise, and hopefully, it levels off and it maybe goes down. So it's putting a lot of stress on our agency, but obviously, it speaks to the stress that families are dealing with. Obviously, in these cases, many folks were coming to various food banks across the diocese. Many times for the first time. We're dealing with extraordinary crisis. We pray that, at some point we can get back to some sort of normal, but we don't have a sense of when that will be yet. And so we continue, and we're just grateful for the continued support that we get from people, and especially Catholics in the Diocese of Sacramento, that we get. We get a lot of support from the community that allows us to do the mission that we do, and we're very grateful for that.
Yeah, and sometimes you wonder, is there a breaking point? Is there a point where you say, we're doing everything we can do? Like you say, you just talked about over doubling just with food, and food obviously critical to life. but so many other things that are equally, not equally, but also critical to life and well-being and mental health and physical health.
There's many things there's so many issues even before COVID, just the housing epidemic. I mean, some of these things really go beyond the capacity of our agency to meet the needs of the people. We really have to find different ways when we have so many people unhoused, throughout the state. California ranks pretty much at the bottom in terms of the number of unhoused people and unsheltered people. Mm-hmm. So we're as bad as we are. We're first by a long shot. Even our next closest state, which is New York, their sheltered population is, even those that are unhoused are sheltered at least at something like 80 or 90%. In our case, we have so many unsheltered homeless people. And you don't have to, you can just drive around and you can see all these shanty towns.
Yep.
And it really reminds us of probably, and again, this is before my time, but I know my dad grew up in the Depression, and it's like those shanty towns. It's
yep.
really unfortunate, and we really should do better as a society, and we need to do better.
I think they called those.
We do the best we can.
I think they called those Hoovervilles, mm-hmm. after mm-hmm. the president at the time. You know, whether that was fair or not, that was one of the and you see the pictures from the Depression of the long lines. In most cases, these long these soup lines, as they call them, it was men, and out fending for their families. And some of those pictures and the migrant workers, especially a lot of the Central Valley was settled, people coming west, the grapes of wrath, all of that. So much happened back then, and we're seeing some repeat of that. You can go to any town in any city now, and as you say, you see the homeless camps, and they're extensive. And some people say we need to break up those camps, it's this and it's that and it's the other thing, but with no real we've had this problem for a long time, but it's really gotten much worse, and there doesn't seem to be a magic button that anybody can push that solves it.
That's true, and in fairness, for those like myself who gotten involved trying to work with homeless, in my case, homeless families, it seems a lot easier when you get, when you're kind of far from it, but as the closer you get to serving those in need, you can see the complexity of
yep.
what's in front of you. And that said, what we've seen here, some of those things really are a result of various policies, and of course, we know some of the major ones were the changes in the mental health policies that got rid of the psych wards and institutions mm-hmm. that were dealing with folks with mental illness, which is a major subgroup. But some of the sort of smaller things that seemed like they were a good idea at the time, sort of housing first model. Now, again, it's a good model to try to house people first and then wrap around services. The problem has been that sort of all of the services have sort of moved away from shelters.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we have now is so many unsheltered homeless people. And you got to distinguish between a homeless person that is in a shelter and then someone that is exposed, that those that are just fending for themselves in these shanty towns, these are dangerous places in mm-hmm. many levels. And, if you're dealing with mental illness, if you're dealing with substance abuse, good luck. I mean, you are in the Lord of the Flies kind of situation, mm-hmm. survival mode, and it's just... It's not safe for those in those places, and it's obviously not safe for the community. And then when you look at something like this pandemic, it's not safe for the overall community. And so we have to look at tackling this. And there's things that we can do that on net really could be saving the community funds in terms of public safety and public health. And yet also giving people real dignity in terms of housing people. It just is not a good policy to have to allow so many people to be unhoused in any community. And obviously it just shows that that we have something broken. And, you know, as people of faith, again, we don't have the answers, but we know what is right and what God desires, and he sees every human being as a child of God with dignity. And there are certain basic necessities that every human person needs, and obviously that's air to breathe and water, but it's also things like food and shelter. And so it's not acceptable. And even for those that are struggling with mental illness or even drug addiction, we got to find ways to at least create safety for folks and shelter. Obviously they don't have to be put up in a Taj Mahal, but we need to do better than what we're doing. So, yeah, we do have a long way to go as a society. We a lot of times what we're doing, Bob, is we accompany people while they're struggling. Sometimes we're able to move people out of poverty, and sometimes we stand with folks that are struggling. Think of loaves and fishes. Mm-hmm. They're just with folks. They're not necessarily seeking to try to immediately get them out of their situation. They're just being with them and just giving them dignity where they're at. And sometimes that's all you can do.
Yeah, and you know, so many of the shelters for years, it was, you know, no substance abuse allowed, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. A lot of shelters are going away from that model, where because they realize that you're not able to attack the problem if you have these real strict rules.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what's really important is that you look at safety, and so obviously, you know, you don't want to have people selling drugs and so right. on, and if people are acting a certain way, you know, they can't be there.
Right.
So there's no sort of easy solution that, obviously drugs are a problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's a problem for those that are using the drugs, and it's a problem for society overall. But we also have to deal with individuals as they are and meeting them in those places. So there have to be places for them. I do believe that, you know, obviously if they're going to a drug treatment shelter, that absolutely there should be rules about drugs.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to a place like Loaves and Fishes, there needs to be hospitality houses as well.
Mm-hmm.
It just gives people dignity. That's what God calls us to do. He was with the sinners while they were still prostitutes. Of course, he was calling them to give up that life of sin, but he also was present with them in that place. So we need to be in all places. We need to be with those that are really still in the struggle. And, of course, Catholic Charities, most of our work is around empowerment. Most of our work is helping to break the cycle of poverty. We're working to address the sort of underlying factors and hopefully moving people out of shelter or preventing them from getting into shelter or improving their lives with tackling things that are, for instance, their immigration status.
Mm-hmm.
If there's ways to remedy that or get them to become citizens, there's a path to citizenship that we help that, because that ultimately helps those families thrive. And that's kind of our particular niche. That's our mission. But we also, at the same time, we do work with and support so many agencies, like Sacramento Food Bank, support so many agencies and churches that are just feeding people that are hungry. And we don't ask if you're clean and sober. We ask if you're hungry. And so you have to do all of those things. And when you got to help them. You got to help them get out of that. But it ultimately, that's up to those individuals. But the church, we need to be ready to welcome people and bring them back into the community.
Yeah, amen. So racial justice has come to the fore.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It should always be at the fore, but obviously has become very much in our consciousness. I mean, we can go, George Floyd and all the things that have happened since then. How is Catholic Charities involved in that?
Well, Catholic Charities, as the agencies, isn't so much. It's more the Office of Catholic Charities, which I'm also involved with that works directly under the bishop. And, the U.S. bishops, a couple of years ago, put out a document, Open Wide Our Hearts.
Yeah, a beautiful document, really.
Yeah, and it was very, it preceded the George Floyd, but also was in the context of Ferguson and many other sort of racial conflict that has been emerging in these last years. Now, the conflict has been there. It hasn't sort of gone away, but we've seen sort of an increased level of tension in society. And, folks, unfortunately these days, the conversation has been absolutely toxic, and it really hasn't been helpful to moving us forward in terms of really tackling the real issues of race, racism in our society, because it's really been really more about I'm with the Black Lives Matter camp and I'm with the Blue Lives Matter camp, and it's very divisive, very political, and it's very difficult to talk about this issue of race without it, devolving into an ideological conversation. But really, from the faith perspective, Jesus, when he instituted the Eucharist, really was inviting us into a communion with God. And in the process of that was inviting us to be in communion with each other. And so when we come to Mass and celebrate Mass, we are in communion. We're seeking to be in communion with God, of course, but in order to do that, we need to be in communion with our brothers and sisters. And Jesus has laid that out in so many different ways, and St. Paul and the church has laid it out, that you can't really be in union with God if you can't first be in union with your brother and sister. And so racism is fundamentally an impediment to union and communion with God and with each other. And so what we've been trying to do is not just look at sort of the political structural issues of racism, where it manifests in things like education, things like healthcare, things like poverty, things like criminal justice. We have been doing that as well. But what we've really been focused on is having the conversation about race within our own institutions. So really listening to people within our parishes, within our schools, and trying to see, where they see race manifest in our own institutions. And it's been very interesting and very informative in that what we found was that it was very difficult. It's extremely difficult for our priests, our teachers, our catechists, to have a constructive conversation about race. Because what has typically happened is usually when people say that they experienced sort of an experience of racism or a feeling that they were attacked, it was usually in the context of a well-meaning teacher, a well-meaning priest, someone that was trying to facilitate a conversation, but was doing so in the context of well, let's just have an intellectual conversation, but not really recognizing that the issue of race really, for many people, or racism, it is a traumatic experience. They've had trauma. And so, as an example, so we talk with some of the folks from Jesuit and St. Francis High School, and they talked about how when the issue of Stephon Clark came up, mm-hmm. The classes, they would have a conversation about Stephon Clark. And so the kids of color, especially the African-American kids, would, kind of share their concern. And on the other side, there would be, well, Stephon Clark, he deserved it. He kind of was in, he did some bad things, and it kind of was his fault. Now, the problem is that normally you could have a back-and-forth debate. But for many of the kids, they've had, one of the kids was directly, he was related to Stephon Clark. Mm-hmm. Other kids had similar types of experience, and it was very traumatic for him. Another kid, young man from Jesuit, young African-American man, probably about 15 or 16, he said, growing up, my whole life, I never had a problem. I go to Little League. I go into stores. It wasn't a problem. But when I turned 15, all of a sudden, everyone looked at me different, and they were afraid of me.
Wow!
And you could see it was really just weighing heavy on him.
Hmm.
And so this is an emotional issue. So what would happen would be that the African-American students would have an emotional response. And then the teacher would say, hey, you need to be quiet. You're getting emotional. And then they would shut down the conversation, and then both the tension would remain. And the only thing that you learned from that experience was, let's not talk about race.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah.
So that's not what we need to do. We really need to seek to understand each other and not to label, Bob's a racist. That is not the way to go. You may have had an experience of when you were really young, maybe you had a really negative experience of, being in a diverse school. Maybe there was an African-American kid that was a bully for you, and that sort of has formed you a little bit. And you need to be able to have a space to be able to kind of share those things so that when we do eventually come around the table, that we have a deeper level of kinship with each other. And so what we've been working on is developing this dialogue, racial dialogue training, which is really not in any way ideologically focused. It's really teaching the skills of how to facilitate a deep, emotionally, safe conversations when we're talking about race. And of course, we can use this with other very difficult topics that we're dealing with these days. Let's talk about sexual identity or any number of things. We need to be able, as St. Paul said, in Ephesians, he was talking to the church and he said, we need to take the things that are happening in this community, the things of just that are embarrassing, the things that we were talking about sex, he was talking about all these really dark things. We need to take these things that we see and that are in the darkness and bring them out to the light of Christ. Because anything that we bring up to the light of Christ reflects back God's light. And mm-hmm. so we can't, when we push down things like racism, it doesn't get better. It only gets worse. And it only continues to divide our communities. So what we're seeing, though, unfortunately, on the national stage is division. And that is not where we want to head. We want to head towards understanding.
Yep.
And towards, ultimately, to communion. And so we see, really, that's going to be our piece in this story, is trying to develop that sense of communion within our own very multicultural church. And then we want to take that sort of our own sort of experiences and learnings, and then bring that out to the community and try to seek for conversations with other churches and talking about race, and try to see where we can come together and bring union into our society. Because it's really, in order to tackle things like homelessness, like what we're dealing with this pandemic, we need to be together.
Yes.
There's just too much division in society, and we're treating each other as if we're the enemy. And we have to remember, you know, we're not fighting against flesh and blood. This battle that we're charged to fight is really against the principalities. It's really against the forces of good and
yep,
evil.
Boy.
So we need to train our weapons, turn them away back from our fellow brothers and sisters, and turn them back to where they need to be going, against Satan himself, against the devil, and saying, no, we're not attacking each other. We need to seek to understand each other. She's not the enemy. The enemy is deeper, and the enemy is not only in them, but the enemy is in me, too. And so I need to come at it with a sense of humility and recognizing the answer, the weapon, is Jesus. He absolutely focused on Jesus. Whatever you do, even when we're talking about racism, it is ultimately the purpose, the reason that we engage in this is to move to communion, to be with Jesus, and we recognize that racism has no place. It needs to be completely eradicated if we are to be fully in communion.
So well said, John. John, we're flat out of time. We need to explore this even more. Hopefully we can get you back on real soon. John Watkins, the director of Catholic Charities and Social Concerns. Thanks so much, John.
Thank you, Bob.
Yeah, God bless. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless.
To the cross I look, and to the cross I cling. Of its suffering I do drink, of its work I do sing. On it my Savior, both bruised and crushed, showing that God is love and God is just. I'm reconciled.